that's like the last thing as an educator that you would want to happen when a student is asking you for something that they need help with, and you're giving them the thing that you think that you that you're giving them the thing that you think they need when indeed they're asking the thing they're telling you, this is what I need, and right there that's problematic.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing it all the way from bureaucracy to everyday practice.
I hate bureaucracy
all day.
They need to just be gone from every single.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Chu, Brian Chu, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our engineer, Danielle. Thank you, Stephen. This is Chris Reiser. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/fuzzyboo.
What's good? This is Tevin, your host here at Combined Culture Radio.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jalen, Super Ultra Extra, your co-host. And here at Combined Culture, we're here to touch on multiple aspects of the culture.
Our first show is Wednesday, August 16th at 7 p.m. Tune in to spread the culture.
Understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. Tonight we are here with our guest, Christine Van Order. Welcome, Christine.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I'm Emma. I'm one of the co-hosts of Prison Pipeline. This show tonight is dedicated to the memory of Heather Heyer, who was killed in Charlottesville, as well as the memories of Philando Castile and Sandra Bland. Tonight we're going to be talking about prison and prison issues like we do every week, and we're going to be discussing a very disappointing setback with the governor this past week. We're going to be talking about white supremacy in the prisons. We're going to be talking about sexual harassment in the prisons, and we're going to be talking about women's issues and what's going on at Coffee Creek. So Christine, welcome. We've had you on the show before, but let's reintroduce you to our audience so that they know a little bit about you. Fill us in a little bit on your backstory. Who is Christine Van Order?
I am almost 40 years old. When I was 19, I committed a Measure 11 crime, which landed me with 70 months. And I didn't even know what Measure 11 was until then. I fulfilled, you know, really a lot of goals while I was in prison. And so I look at it as not necessarily a negative experience that saved my life. But since then, I have turned into a victims advocate and a criminal justice reform advocate. I ran for state rep as an unaffiliated candidate in my district, not because I wanted to win, but because I wanted to be a voice for people who are getting silenced.
And you did your time at Coffee Creek?
I did. I did my time at the old OWCC. I was shipped out of state to New Mexico during a period of overcrowding. And then we were temporarily housed at EOCI, the men's prison. And then, yes, we were among the first ones to open Coffee Creek.
Yeah. And now you're back here in Portland. You're out in Gladstone.
Gladstone.
And your husband's here tonight,
yes,
too. Do you want to acknowledge him?
This is Sean, hey, Sean, 11 years strong.
Congratulations.
Cannot believe this man is still with me. It shocks not only me, but everybody who knows us. He's the white bread to my 21 grain.
So I want to start by talking about some news from the past week from the governor, kind of a disappointing decision from the governor's office, you know, kind of end of session stuff. What did the governor do this week that, like, you know, we need to pay attention to?
Oh, yeah. Well, very disappointing to a lot of prison reform advocates, which was she vetoed House Bill 689. It would have extended the task force on reentry. And she said it was an unnecessary use of public resources and time. And Hillary Borud from the Borud, I don't know how you say it, but she wrote a very informative article and really pointed me to go do some research of my own, looking at the members and the cost, you know, of the task force versus the governor's Council on Reentry. Mm-hmm. And I think the governor made the wrong call if she was looking to save time and money, because the task force was mostly volunteers and it was full of very passionate people. And I went.
Reentry is so critical.
Yes, it really to success. Is. It mm-hmm. really is. When 6 to 9 months is the average, 9 to 12 months is the average age of or time of recidivism. Mm-hmm. I think it's really critical to prioritize, you know, reentry issues if you don't want to deal with the continual overcrowding that we have right now and the revolving mm-hmm. door effect that we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Did the governor give any reasons for why she vetoed this bill?
Well,
it seems like it had broad support.
Yes, it did. It had bipartisan support. And mm-hmm. really, the first time I heard about it was Julie Parrish had posted the article from the Oregonian, because she was on that task force. And she has a family history of incarceration and justice involved people. And so this was something that she was very personally interested in and very involved. And so I was really surprised when it comes to criminal justice reform, out of all the task forces, that's the one that I witnessed the most bipartisan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know. Let's talk about reentry for a couple of minutes. I know that we weren't quite going that way, but mm-hmm. since we are, you know, the governor vetoed this, this committee, which, I mean, is a really important committee. Let's talk about what are some of the issues that, you know, convicted felons face when they're coming out. What are some of the reentry issues that are, like, really critical to success? I mean, you've succeeded. You know, you've been out for a long time now, and, you know, you're really a role model in the community. So, like, for you and for other women, you know, what do you think are some of the really key issues that someone needs to deal with, like, right away, like, jumping out of the gate, the first week, the first month, the first year? What are some of the really
critical? Number one. It's always housing. And it's always when I was going back into the prison as a volunteer, the women that were just getting ready to be released were terrified to be paroled to downtown Portland, because they said, they're sending me back to the same streets that had me trapped. They're mm-hmm. sending me back to my old neighborhood, my old people. Mm-hmm. They were terrified. And so on the when I would go, I was pushing very aggressively for transitional housing with more of a rural focus, mm-hmm. you know, kind of that untapped resources and different counties, you know. But you know what? Those reentry dollars, they go to a handful of people, mm-hmm. and they don't want to let that money go. And mm-hmm. those are located in the big cities. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, the location of the transitional housing, I believe, contributes to recidivism.
Yeah. So housing is one of the most important issues with reentry. What are some other issues that are really key to, like, success for women? Let's talk about women specifically. What are some of the issues that are really key to success for women, like, say, in the first month?
Oh, within the first month. Mm-hmm. Women often are parents. And so navigating DHS, if they've had their children put into foster care or had any type of custody issues, one of the things that we worked on with the Children's Bill of Rights was that a temporary sentence should not permanently separate a child from her mother or from your parent at all. But specifically, we focused on women when we were going through. And, you know, there is some wonderful women's groups that really have been pushing and advocating for a change in the 1522 rule, which says that, you know, if you lose custody, you know, if you don't have your child, you know, if you get a prison sentence that is more than 15 months, they start the termination process and it is completed by 22 months. So when the average sentence for a woman in Oregon is 26 months, I get very suspicious of that. And it has to, when we were going through this class and we were developing the Bill of Rights, and I was talking to so many women that had their children, you know, because they struggled with addiction and they had their children taken away and saying, oh, you can have them back when you get clean. But what we know about addiction, that's like saying, oh, you know, that's like saying, go heal yourself. We know it's much more complex than just that. We know how it changes the brain. So it was, the women were like, well, they were just waiting for me to fail. And they knew I would. They knew I was. They knew I was going to fail.
Yeah.
And so we started discussing Kate Brown's history as a DHS worker and how she was the one, I think on the last campaign, she was talking about a woman that was not in compliance because she didn't have teeth and she went and helped her get teeth so that she could go out look for a job and all this stuff. And I started, after really reading, you know, the books that we were assigned to read and talking to the other women, we all started collectively making this connection that the more kids in foster care, the more federal money that Oregon is guaranteed. And so I had kind of heard people say that once, you know, once in a while, but until I started connecting the dots myself, I started becoming extremely concerned. And so I went to all those lawmakers and I went to the Reentry Task Force and I emailed everybody about this quite aggressively. And so did the other women, the other, our classmates, other women that were formerly incarcerated that had to fight to get their children back. And I think really we were asking for too much fundamental change. I honestly, I went to Senator Dembrough's constituent coffee this last weekend because, you know, I wanted to ask him how he felt about it since he chaired the Reentry Task Force. I wanted to know, do you feel like your time and resources were wasted? Do you feel like the time and resources and everything that people put into this was not worth it?
And what did the senator say?
He, well, for one, there was way more people there than any other, you know, town hall. I've been to some other bigger town halls, but there was a lot more people there than I had anticipated. So I left and I just sent him an email.
Right.
So
maybe time to set up a one-on-one meeting with the senator about that.
Yes. And, and so I just wanted to get his feel for it because, but you know, it goes back down to, well, you know, my theory is that there were too many of us. I mean, we had an entire classroom of women lobbying.
And that is great.
Yeah, from PSU. It was wonderful. It was just an amazing experience to work on the Children's Bill of Rights. But we were all so adamant because, you know, this is the time where everybody's telling us, stand up. You know, be a voice, be heard. Well, someone just shut us down. You know, someone just took away the task force that was really a really good outlet for our voice.
Yeah. Well, there's always next legislative session.
Oh, yeah.
There's backdoor ways to deal with this.
Well, and there's the governor's Council on Reentry. I mean, that is still in effect.
Right.
So the next meeting for that one is, I want to say September 13th. And so if anyone wants to go, it's September 13th from, I think, 2:30 to 4 at the, you know, the Oregon State Capitol. And if you're in the Salem area, please go. Go support prison reform because it's important.
Yeah. And I think that at this year's Women in Prison Conference, I would not be surprised if there's a breakout group or some kind of workforce task force put together on this issue. Why did Governor Kate Brown, who in so many other areas we kind of look to for leadership, why did she kind of, you know, drop the ball on this one? So we'll have to. I might write to the governor's office and see if we can get any feedback on that for an upcoming show, because I'd really like to hear from the governor or one of her spokespeople. Why did you veto this bill, which is so important to our, you know, our, I mean, right. It's, I mean, we send people to prison, allegedly we send them to prison in order to reform them. And so at this point in their lives, right when they've done their time and they're coming out, and this is like the most critical time of their success. And it's just like if you had a baby and, you know, you didn't provide adequate care for the baby right after it's born or when it's learning to walk. I mean, this period of time in somebody who's been incarcerated is like so critical to their success when they come back out. And so it's really like it's sending a message that we're setting up people who are incarcerated for failure. And I know that the governor doesn't really want to do that. I'm not sure why she vetoed this legislation, but I'm going to try to get an answer from the governor's office about
please.
This.
And I'll continue looking for answers, because that's, we have the most accessible government, you know, of any other state I've ever heard
so, of. So I think we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about white supremacy in the prison system. And we're also going to talk about what's happening with sexual harassment in the women's prisons. All right, we are back with victims advocate, prison advocate, Christine Van Order. Christine has run successfully for, did you run for U.S. House District 40? Was that it?
And it's state representative.
State rep, yeah, state rep District 40, and is a mom, and you also did 70 months at Coffee Creek earlier in your life on a Measure 11 offense. So, thank you and welcome back. We're going to talk now about something that I think we are all really concerned about. I think that the whole nation right now is kind of reeling in a collective sense of shock at what happened in Charlottesville. I think that it's really hard for any of us to really understand exactly what happened in Charlottesville. I mean, I think that many of us could see it coming, but you know, to see the reality of white supremacy and to see, you know, something that's basically like a throwback to the 1920s, Jim Crow era, and, you know, just the absolute shock of thinking that we live in a country right now where we have an executive branch that is under the control of a white supremacist government. I think it's something that we are all really, really concerned about. And if there's any place where white supremacy shows its ugly face more than anywhere else, it is in our prison system. And if you think that white supremacy doesn't exist in the prison system, then I encourage you to take a second look and find out everything that you can about what's going on within the prison system with prison guards and with officers and even in some cases with prison gangs. So
Jeremy Christian,
let's talk
was
about
a,
that.
Yeah, Jeremy Christian was a part of that prison gang. It was the white supremacist affiliated people inside of our Oregon Department of Corrections that really got a hold of him and fostered his hatred and his mental illness, if you want to call it that. His and it's doing that to so many other people. And that's so unfortunate there that there are other Jeremy Christians out there, and they're either getting ready to be released or they're already out. I know that some of his white supremacist friends from prison did go to his hearing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a brotherhood that extends beyond bars. So that's why we need to be concerned with white supremacist gangs in our prisons, because they get out, they congregate, they plot evil, they feed each other's hatred, and it's something that, as a priority, I would really like to see Governor Brown make this a priority, since there is documented, well-documented history of racial issues and harassment and discrimination in the Department of Corrections, specifically the Vera report from 2015 that showed that Hispanic men disproportionately go to segregation at like 60% higher rate than I think blacks are slightly higher than whites, but it's going to the hole without a hearing. They just cuff them up and take them. Mm-hmm. So it was really shocking. But the good news on that front is that there is a committee addressing it right now at DOC. Mm-hmm. And so I did, I emailed and I finally heard back, yes, this is being addressed. Mm-hmm. Although I did give the information and the reports and copies of it to some lawmakers. And I believe that that helped too, to address it. But with what happened in Charlottesville, I hope that becomes a priority. Mm-hmm. Even more so.
And, you know, in my volunteer time at Coffee Creek, I'm an infrequent volunteer at Coffee Creek. And one of the things that I always hear from a lot of people that I really respect at Coffee Creek is that there is not gang activity in Coffee Creek and that there's not segregation based on race at Coffee Creek.
Yes.
But, and I would love to hear if that's true or not, because, you know, my understanding of prison, almost everything that I know about, you know, the federal systems, the state systems, mm-hmm. In Oregon, in California, across the country, are that they are segregated according to race. That's like one of the first things that happen when you go to prison is you have to go, you know, you immediately get segregated. And I can't imagine a space that will foster white supremacy like quicker than a space that is de facto segregated.
Yes.
So.
And I was actually talking to one.
What is that like at Coffee Creek?
Well, at Coffee Creek, I can tell you from my time from 98 to 2004, it only really reared its ugly head for the girls and the women that had pen pals that were the white supremacists in the male prisons. So I saw right before I paroled, I saw a real emergence of this real obsession with the Celtic religions and these, a lot of, it was tied to white supremacy. And and it had just started kind of rearing its head, kind of towards the end. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously within the, 13 years since then, 13 and a half, it's gotten worse and not better, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I don't hear a lot about it now, but I think it's just the same as it always was. If one of the girls is riding one of these skinheads or one of these white supremacists, they're being influenced through the male. They're mm-hmm. being influenced by this other person who's trying to recruit them.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely, something that people need to be aware of. And, we definitely need to address like across the board. But, within the prison system, if there's a way that we can move forward with that issue, I think that it's, unfortunately, we take people who are in so many ways disadvantaged in the culture, and then we like put them in these institutions that are supposed to be reforming them, but that are really broken. And, people fall back to what they know.
Well, overcrowding, I would say, is probably the main and historic factor that, really, overcrowding is the reason why that's allowed to happen. Mm-hmm. Because you put so many people in such a small space, tensions rise, and the ugliness comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do believe that if we were more creative with transitional housing and had better, more successful transitional housing, then we would stop seeing people go back.
Right.
And we could probably make a huge dent in recidivism.
Well, let's talk about, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, the issue of transitional housing. So for women specifically, what are some of the transitional housing options that women like have access to in Oregon when they get, when they, you know, enter, when they get to their release date?
A lot of Oxford houses are women only.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of private, non-governmental agency, you know, their nonprofits, you know, have stepped up and provided houses that women can transition, mm-hmm. you know, but it's, they pay rent, they, you know, they really do are get, they're given a good opportunity to live in a safe and sober house.
Mm-hmm.
How long they, but it's, they choose, however long they choose to stay there, it's a lot of it's a choice.
Mm-hmm. My sense is that within, you know, the area of like post-release, it's for women, it's generally women are more successful at finding housing and securing housing after release than men. A lot of, I know a lot of men on the streets who were former inmates at the CRC or even just in county jail.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be you know, an encouraging of like actually finding some kind of stable housing. So, I mean, that's a real positive.
I think women, and also that has to do with women encouraging each other in general.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, men don't connect on that deeper level. And
right.
I've seen that. I mean, there's brain science behind why that
mm-hmm.
is so. But women are constantly connecting and networking. Just the power of women networking and advocating for each other is
mm-hmm.
it is very unique, and it's very beautiful to behold. I love
yeah,
seeing that.
It really is. And you know, even like within Coffee Creek, that's something that always has really impressed me about you know, the environment, is that I see women giving each other a lot of support, mm-hmm. like within the institution. There's
mm-hmm,
a lot of
yes.
people checking in with each other, saying, how are you feeling? You know, it's like they have a second sense. I mean, women have a second sense with each other for, you know, how are things going?
Oh, and, absolutely.
And so,
those relationships mm-hmm. have been made the difference between, you know, surviving and just not surviving
mm-hmm.
your sentence, is those friendships. And those, really, a lot of women come out with these lifelong, deep, connected friendships, to where, you know, I just met up with a group of women, we hadn't seen each other in over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we just connected like we'd never spent a day apart. It's because in that environment, when you're there for each other, that's, it's very, it's, it can be very intense.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, I think it is, it's definitely unique to the women's prison.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, we're up to like, maybe we've got about a minute or two left, Christine. The time has really gone by really fast. so I'm definitely going to follow up on this governor's veto and find out for the next show. What's going on for you? What's coming up for you in the next few months?
Well, for me, I'm going to go to the next governor's reentry council meeting,
September
13th at the state capitol.
What time?
It is, I believe, 2:30.
2:30 at the state
capitol. And
Capitol.
And you'll have to double check on that, because I'd love to reach for my phone, because I have a little tab to make sure, to put it on my phone, make sure
mm-hmm.
I don't miss it. But I think that really, and holding them accountable, you know, to make sure that the things, the policies and the proposed law changes that are coming out of this council are going to mean something, and they're
mm-hmm.
going to actually make a change.
Mm-hmm. Great. Any plans to run for office in 2018?
Fortunately, I love my state rep. I love Mark Meek.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Hispanic man,
mm-hmm.
and when I told him, you know, he's one of the ones I gave the information to about,
mm-hmm.
you know, that stuff. I mean, he cares about people. He's really concerned, and as long as he's there, I don't need to worry about it. Now, if he decides not to run again,
then
I can
all bets
definitely,
are off.
Mm-hmm. It's like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stepping up.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We've been joined today by Christine Van Order, victims' rights advocate, prison advocate, and former Coffee Creek inmate, Christine, and also mom. Christine, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Prison Pipeline. And again, we would like to remind everyone that this show is dedicated to the memory of Heather Heyer, who was murdered in Charlottesville, and to the memories of Philando Castile and Sandra Bland, and all the people who have died for justice. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. We'd like to thank our engineer, Danielle, and we will see you next week. Good night.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
misunderstood. What's good? This is Tevin, your host here at Combined Culture Radio.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jalen, Super Ultra Extra, your co-host. And here at Combined Culture, we're here to touch on multiple aspects of the culture.
Our first show is Wednesday, August 16th at 7 p.m. Tune in to spread the culture.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag